And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, broadcasting from BBS Radio, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552. Or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Candace Knight is the enchanting singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist for the medieval folk rock group Blackthorn's Knight. Candace was raised on Long Island, New York, and began a modeling career at the age of 12, appearing in print ads, commercials, and promotions at trade shows into her 20s. She hosted a rock show at a local Long Island radio station, which helped transform her destiny. Knight met Ritchie Blackmore, legendary lead guitarist for Deep Purple, at a soccer match hosted by WBAB, the classic rock radio station she worked at. Blackmore enlisted Knight to sing backup vocals on Deep Purple's The Battle Rages On tour in 1993. Knight went on to co-write and contribute her musical styles to Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow on the tracks Ariel, Hall of the Mountain King, Black Masquerade, and Wolf to the Moon for the Strangers in Us All album. Knight also toured with Rainbow as a background vocalist. Candace also provided vocals on Ritchie Blackmore's version of Apache on the album Twang, a tribute to Hank Marvin and the Shadows. Compilation features some of the greatest guitarists of our time. In 1997, Blackmore's Knight catapulted the duo of Ritchie Blackmore and Candace Knight into a fairy tale journey, performing wizardry, medieval folk arrangements with a dose of rock and roll. The group's debut album, Shadow of the Moon, endured the European music charts for 17 weeks. The track Play Minstrel Play featured Ian Anderson, the superlative flautist of Jethro Tull. With her second solo offering, Starlight, Star Bright, Knight's vocal quality is richer than in years past, bringing you to a quiet and intimate place with the singer, a place of beauty and dreams. Inspired by the birth of her children, Autumn and Rory, she began creating this CD when she was pregnant with her first child. I really felt just so completely full of love and part of this bigger picture, this miracle, Knight remembers. I wanted to sing to celebrate this incredible life that was occurring inside of me. I've never felt so spiritual. When her children were born, she sang to them each night to lull them to sleep and each morning so they would awaken with the wonderful sound of song. When she spoke to other moms who wished they could sing to their own children but didn't have the confidence in their own voices to do so, Candace decided to create this CD, not only for her own children, but for the moms who wished they had soothing songs to ease their child's journey into dreamland after the sun sets. So many parents enjoyed the songs so much. Candace was reticent in calling this a lullaby CD, though that's what she originally intended to do. Now created for children and adults to relax, she terms it Music to Dream By. On Starlight, Star Bright, you will find new original melodies, some co-written and played with Ritchie Blackmore, some solo by Knight, as well as a song originally written by her daughter Autumn when she was only a year and a half. I walked in one day and she was singing this beautiful song to her dolls as she lay them down to sleep. I recorded it on video without her knowing it, and the song has always stayed with me since that first moment I heard it. It's called Lullaby in the Night. It was the first video I shot for the project as well. Once in a Garden is another song that a video was filmed for from the CD, starring Candace's children as well as a wonderful group of other children playing pretend as children do. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful song about their innocence that the video encapsulates perfectly. Other songs from the CD include old and new favorites, all recorded with the Candace Night magic put to them. As the executive producer of the CD and the woodwind player, as well as vocalist and lyricist, each sound recorded was done so under her careful direction to ensure the sound was the beautiful sound of what she felt lullabies should be. Knight's velvety vocals add new dimension to John Denver's Annie song, Plums in My Arms, as well as Disney favorites, So This Is Love and Baby Mine. Many other songs await you on this musical journey to the land of dreams. Please welcome the enchanting songstress, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist from Blackboard's Knight, Candace Knight. Hello, Candace.
Hi, everyone. How are you today?
We're doing fine. Great. The last time we chatted was, Blackmore's Night was on their 15th anniversary.
Wow.
And you had released A Night in York, which was an awesome CD, DVD, special edition collection. So, and we had a great time chatting, I remember.
Yeah, we always have fun. So it
exactly.
Sounds like we're due every 5 years then?
Every 5 years,
Because this year is our 20th anniversary, so it's been a long time.
Last time you were telling me how Richie loves to run the Hoover. Does he still like vacuuming?
always. It's actually, that was the key of what actually made me marry him. Is if you, ladies, if you can find a man who likes to vacuum, just grab him, really. Don't let him go.
You know, you two mesh so well together. You know, your personalities are a little different, you know. he's a little more laid back, and you're a little bit more outgoing. But, you know, you're perfect as husband and wife.
That's what they say.
Cool.
Opposites attract, you know. I always find I always kind of visualize that yin-yang thing. I know it sounds
right.
So cliche, but, like, you know, he's like kind of the dark part of yin-yang, and I'm like the light part, and we kind of just somehow fit together. So, like, his strengths are my weaknesses and vice versa. So together, I think we make one complete person.
That's funny. The dark and the light, huh?
Yeah, totally. I wonder who's who.
How are the children doing?
They're fantastic. They're amazing. We have so much fun every day. In all honesty, Autumn is 7 years old now. And
wow, you're kidding me.
I know. Rory's 5. And he's like your typical little man. He's all cars, trucks, and women. He hits
right.
on women to the point of embarrassment for me sometimes. But they have so much energy. They could, like, just one of them could probably power a small city. If I could just get, like, a hamster wheel or something and
right,
keep them running
right.
on it, it would be amazing. I might put them under the hood of my car or have one of those Fred Flintstone mobiles from back in the day.
But, it's amazing how much energy they have.
So much energy. I wish I had more energy. I wish I had more energy, eyes in the back of my head, and, like, enough arms, you know, that an octopus could, like, take care of everything I needed to. And then I'd be golden. I'd have it all under control.
Well, listen to this. My son's wife is due in October, and she's going to have identical twin girls.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
We're going to be listening to Starlight, Star Bright a lot.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad. I just want to say I'm glad I can help out.
Oh, yeah.
In advance. That's going to be
exactly.
very helpful for you guys.
Any kind of tool we can use to settle them down, you know,
right.
or settle us down
right.
is a great thing.
Well, I'll tell you, when the babies sleep or when the babies are relaxed and calm,
right.
then mommy gets to sleep or daddy gets to sleep. Everybody else in the house gets to sleep and relax. So it actually winds up being really helpful for the whole household.
You know, there's nothing like a nap when the whole family just takes a whole nap together. Even
yeah.
if it's for like 15, 20 minutes. You
oh,
know,
exactly.
It, yeah.
That's so true. You never realize how important sleep is until you don't have it.
Exactly.
Right? Like I figured I was ready to have kids because, I mean, I'm a musician. So, you know, I've been with my husband since 1989. So it's almost 30 years this year. And before we had kids, I was like, look, we've slept late for like 20 years already.
Right.
I mean, we sleep until, you know, we're up until 2 a.m. We sleep until like 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. You know, we do all of our work. We're up the same amount of hours as everybody else. We're just, you know, on a different shift. But I was like, oh, I've slept late so long. I'm sure I've got it all out of my system now. You know, it's fine. Now I can get up really early with the kids and do whatever we need to. No, you know, I thought I had it all figured out. You don't have the sleep. You don't have the sleep, and you feel horrible. You definitely need your sleep. And now I'm actually burning at both ends because I try to keep up with my kids. My daughter, you know, or actually my son's starting kindergarten in September, so
well,
I'll be up at 7 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning with them. But my husband still wants me to stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning with him.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually binging right now on Better Call Saul. I mean, that's like our 45 minutes of adult time at night. Like, I put both kids to sleep, and then, one at a time in tandem, and then I come downstairs and I watch Better Call Saul with him, and then I go upstairs and fall asleep by, like, 2 a.m.
But, and that's a big thing.
That's a big thing for us,
it
right?
Is
exactly.
A big thing.
But honestly,
yeah.
Like right now, it's summertime, so now we're back into our musicians' hours. So both kids
right.
go to sleep by 1 o'clock in the morning, and they wake up at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, which is beautiful.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. Now, do you guys practice at nighttime? Are you in the studio, or
we actually have a studio in our home.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lower level. Our basement level is, originally when we first moved into our house, it was a contemporary house. It's right on the water, and it's beautiful, but it was all white on white with, like, white Venetian blinds and white
right.
walls and white carpeting, and we said, oh, no, that's like dentist office white, like now.
Exactly.
So over the years, we've made it our sanctuary. We've kind of, we put in medieval tapestries and wrought iron
oh, wow.
sconces, and the walls on the carpets are burgundies and
mm.
Like rich dark greens, and the whole lower level basement area is a dungeon, which of course everyone needs in their home.
Everybody
so,
needs a dungeon.
We have medieval torture devices on the walls. It's a beautiful thing. So the walls are made of like stone down there. So it's taken a while for us to build
cool.
something up. It's
That's
very
really cool.
cool. Everything is very low lit, very low lighting, and but it's a bar area down there, like
right.
It's a man cave, per se.
Nothing wrong with that,
right? So he loves it. That's his area down there, and it really does look like you just stepped into a medieval pub or bar,
mm.
over in Europe somewhere, which is of course it's hard to find here in America. They're out there, but they're few and far between. And
exactly.
But he always said that he wanted to be the only musician who didn't have a studio in his home. He was happy with the bar
right.
in his house. But after a while, we actually found out that it would make sense for us to just be able to, when we do record, to have a studio. So we have a studio like right off of the bar. So it's perfect because he can drink and then go right into the studio and record.
Sure. That makes sense.
It's strategically perfect the way it's placed down there.
I love the new album. It's actually not real new. Didn't it come out like a year and a half ago or something like that?
Yeah, it came exactly. That's right. Yeah.
But
it took a while
to
put it together, and then
right.
It was a couple of years in the making and the progress on it, and it getting it exactly the way I wanted it to be, and then exactly, we put it out about a year and a half ago.
All the critics have been saying that your voice has gotten better. Have you been doing anything, or is it just the type of songs that you've been singing? Maybe it just kind of spotlights your voice a little more doing these songs. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's a good point. I kind of think it's probably a few things. Scientifically, my voice is like anybody else's voice. It's basically a muscle,
mm-hmm.
So, to work it out, like you sing over the years. And I've noticed, like listening back to our first album, Shadow of the Moon, back in 97,
right.
It was much higher, higher pitches. But it still had like this really refreshing innocence that you wouldn't, get out there in today's
mm-hmm.
music world. So, but then, of course, recording and touring and doing all the things, do all the interviews, all of this, the scales that I'm doing, vocal exercises and things. Over the years, it's just kind of honed my voice, really, and my skill and my craft have I feel gotten stronger, and I've gotten more comfortable, more even in a mental and emotional way. Like I feel much more comfortable out there now, just breaking into song, whereas maybe 20 years ago I was much more shy and although Richie,
right.
I love how he can see things in people that maybe even those particular people can't see. Like I never would have thought 20 years ago that I would have been front and center stage, but he obviously saw something in me that, or in my voice that he thought was refreshing or new or different or some, whatever it was, it fit for what he wanted to do at the time. And really that's where Blackmore's Night kind of was born, in that comfort zone of being able to just sing and play acoustically and, make it work for us. So over the years, I think that with the touring and everything else, everything's gotten stronger. The stage presence has gotten stronger. I'm more in my comfort zone now. You know, and of course, 20 years or 20 something years in, you know, doing music, it's I think everything's just kind of we're at our peak, and hopefully the peak will just keep rising. You know, it'll keep going. So it's we're in a good place.
You know, it's so apparent that you guys love music, and I love the way you can just start singing, and then, you know, Richie brings his acoustic out or whatever kind of the oud or whatever kind of guitar he's playing at the time. And, you know, you guys can play anywhere, and you sound terrific, you know. And then, you know, not like a lot of the artists today with auto-tune, you know what I mean?
No, definitely not.
You're the real thing.
As a matter of fact, that's one of the things that he really loves, is just being able to take a mandola or a mandolin or just an acoustic guitar.
That's
and
so
like
cool.
Maybe a penny whistle or a shawm, throw it in the back of the car, and we can go anywhere. And just and we do that all the time. It's so funny that you mentioned that, because the other day, probably about 2 or 3 days ago, we were at a local park right here where we live, you know, like around in Long Island. And it was beautiful. The full moon was out, and it was rising. You know, the sun had already set, and the sky was all different colors of pink, and it was just amazing. And the kids were playing on the playground, and Richie had brought the mandola and the mandola and one of the shawms. And we just wanted to do music, so we sat at one of the picnic tables, and the park was emptying out, of course, because, you know, the dark was coming. But that's our perfect time of night. The fireflies were all around.
Right.
And we just sat there and we played while the kids rolled down the hill and chased fireflies and, you know, in this very public surrounding. And we noticed that there was this couple with two younger children, and they kind of were around the bend, like beyond this wall of hedges, but they were kind of hovering and just sitting there waiting. And you never know why people are waiting there, but after we had finished like probably a good 45 minutes worth of music, they walked down the path, you know, to get to their car, and as they passed us, they said, "We just wanted to thank you guys for the private concert. We're really big Blackmore's Night fans," and it was like the most amazing. And we had no idea that they even knew, you know, anything about who we were or what we were doing. And the woman was an oboe player, and they had their two kids there, and they just loved it, and they wouldn't leave until we stopped playing, and they were just such big fans. So it was great to be able, you know, to give that to them as a little, you know, private music concert. But we weren't aware that we were even doing that, because for us to be able to take our music anywhere and just play for ourselves, it's just so freeing, you know, and such a great thing. And like Richie always says, you know, in any other band, he'd have to, you know, pack Marshalls and or Engel amps and, you know, and his electric. Like, no, it's very difficult for people to be able to do that. So we're really, really blessed and lucky that we can just take it wherever we go and be able to create.
That's one of my favorite songs, by the way, Fireflies.
Oh, thank you. It's a Faith Hill
song. That's a cool song.
Yeah, I love that.
And, of course, you got a couple of official videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You got the Lullaby in the Night, which is awesome. The story behind that is really, really cool.
Yeah.
And Once in a Garden is also on YouTube. And it's getting a lot of hits, too, by the way. A lot of people a lot of people really like that.
Oh, I'm glad. That's great. Yeah, I mean, it's they're coming, you know, all of these songs, I feel like they're coming from such a place of innocence and naivete and just these beautiful, pure moments. And I don't know, I always feel like when you listen to music today, it feels like either so overtly aggressive or overtly like sexual, you know, with all the dance moves and the pyrotechnics and the sexy outfits or it always has to be like in your face. And
I know.
You know what I mean? It's like back it up like 3 feet, please. You know?
I know.
It's so much, and so I think it's really rare to find these moments and to appreciate them and to enjoy them and for some people to even realize that they're there, you know, because a lot of people aren't brought up like that. They don't realize it, especially in these days too of you know, iPads and iPhones, and every kid you see is like just staring at a screen, and I don't know. I feel like we're kind of losing track of ourselves. So I always love to get back to, you know, to nature and to feeling the wind in your hair and watching the fireflies and, you know, and looking out for stars and, you know, the things that I do with my children or the things I did even before I had children. You know, that was the stuff that renewed my spirit. That was the stuff that after a hard day at work or, you know, like I needed to recharge my batteries or there's stress from so many different sources, you kind of just really need to unplug. And by unplug, I don't mean turning on a television and just zoning out. Like, I mean really just get away from all this electronic stuff and just get outside and breathe some fresh air and watch a sunset. And you just get renewed, you know. And I'm so enthusiastic about even the idea or the feeling of you know, of that. And I find that people have a tendency not to do it, or sometimes they don't even know that that's even, it just never even comes into their mind. So creating this album and really, I mean, even on the classic songs like So This Is Love or Baby Mine, things like that, or even the John Denver song, which actually, strangely enough, Annie's song was Richie and my wedding song. So that was our first dance song. So, but, you know, even with things like that, those songs are brilliant, wonderful classics. People might not normally think to sing that to a child in your arms to rock them to sleep.
Right.
But anything that that came out of my mouth to sing to my children, I wanted to be just totally innocent, totally beautiful, no negative connotations. So I even took out, like, little bits and pieces of those songs that were out there that I feel, you know, it bothered me to sing certain words, like just for, you know, some random example, like when John Denver sings, "Let me die in your arms." Like, I would never sing, you know, like, just anything with death, like, I never needs to be around my child as I'm singing in his sleep. So, you know, but "Let me lie in your arms" is what your child is doing. They're lying in your arms. And so there were certain little tweaks that made so much sense to me that wound up being so perfect and were simple, like, little easy fixes that I was able to incorporate and just really make it, bring it back to that innocent point to not only make me feel better singing it in words, but make me feel better as I'm, make my child feel better, even though they don't understand the language at that point. It's just a soothing tone and a calming place and just pure and innocent. And I really feel like with this album, I was really able to encompass that whole vibe.
Well, I can't imagine your kids, you know, bringing your parent to school day or something like that, and they bring you and Richie. How cool would that be? And you guys are playing, you know, Blackmore's Night stuff, you know, and you're singing to the kids, you know, your lullabies and things like that. That's so awesome.
Strangely enough, I'll tell you what, my daughter and my son both, I have done this for both of them, actually in three different schools. My kids have gone to, like, a more of a nature-based school when they were 2 and 3, and I only put them in, like, 2 days a week for, like, just to, you know, to get used to other children, which is ironic because when my daughter was 2, she was telling me that that she was pensive instead of, you know, like, she would use, like, these giant words at the age of 2, and
wow,
it was amazing. Yeah, she was getting her nails done for my sister's wedding, and the woman was like, "Are you sad, sweetie? You're so quiet." She's like, "I'm not sad, I'm just pensive." I'm like, "Oh my god."
That's so
just
funny.
Amazing. Or, you know, like, she would walk into the den when my husband would have left a news station on, and she, you know, it wasn't baby TV or something, you know, wasn't on. So she'd go in that room, and I'd be like, "Oh, honey, didn't you want to watch, you know, Bonnie Bear or whatever was on it?" She goes, "No, mommy, daddy has this TV on, and it was ridiculous and preposterous, and I won't watch preposterous TV."
Preposterous.
I'm like, "Oh, well, understood." You know?
That's hilarious.
Both of them are just, they keep me hysterical laughing all day long. We really have a good time. But so they were in this very nature-based kind of thing, school for a couple of days a week, a couple hours a day when they were both 2, and then 2 to 3. And then when they were 4 years old, I put them in a school that was more academic-based. So, you know, they were more, not that they needed more academic stimulation, but it was good for them. Maybe 3 days a week we did that. But it was so funny because I volunteered. I said, "Is there any way that, you know," like, they were always looking for, you know, they would bring in the canine dogs so the kids could meet, you know, the police officer, and they always had these things. And I was like, can I come in and bring, you know, my stuff? And the teachers, all of them, were like, "Absolutely." So what I would do is take all of my medieval and Renaissance woodwind instruments, and I dressed up in full garb like I do on stage.
Wow. How cool.
And I sat there and I did a whole, for all of them, you know, all the kids would just sit like it was a little assembly. And I did this maybe 4 times, so a couple times for my daughter and a couple times for my son, different years in preschool. And that's what I did. I sat there with the different instruments, and I'd start off with the smallest little penny whistle, the G penny whistle, and I would bring it up to, like, the big penny whistles, and then all the different recorders, and then the crumb horns, which they love because it looks like an elephant's trunk, you know, but makes that really buzzy sound, and then some the Rausch pipes, which are very loud, and different kinds of shawms with different holes in the back. So, I mean, where else are they going to see or hear stuff like that? And then, of course, I would play the songs with them and hand out little recorders for them to take home and probably drive their parents crazy. But they loved it. All the kids were just, they're so into music, and I feel like music is so important to have, you know, as a foundation when you're so young. It's just like this amazing thing. I feel like it wakes up part of your mind, and it brings you, you know, my daughter, we were driving the other day, and my daughter said to me, "Mommy, I'm bored," in the back of the car. I said, "Good. I'm glad that you're bored. You know why? Because out of boredom comes the birth of songs and the birth of stories and great, you know, storytellers and art and painting and fairy tales." And I said, "So I want you to be bored. So now your brain will think, okay, how do I make myself not bored?" And she asked me for a pen and paper and a note. So I gave her a notebook, and she wrote like 6 stories before we got to our destination, all
wow,
different ideas.
That's
and
great.
She illustrated them. And
that's
I'm like,
great.
That's fantastic. I would so much rather have you do things like that, you know. And
right.
She's sounding it all out phonetically and stuff, which is so cute. And but you know, I'd rather them have that than you know, be looking at a screen that tells them what to think. Tell you know,
Candace, you're a great mom. You really are. That's awesome.
Thank you. I you know what, you need to hear that as a mom. You need to hear that because
you're
again,
a great
you feel
mom.
Like kind of
I'm sure Richie's a great dad.
He is. He brings them outside and plays soccer with them. You know, he's really good. We have a really good time.
That's awesome.
Thank you. I needed that.
You know, all the best times I remember in elementary school were, you know, I remember playing with different instruments, you know, mm-hmm. and we had our music teacher, and I remember she always had like a xylophone or something, not mm-hmm. a xylophone, what John Sebastian always played, with the Love and Spoonful, can't remember it, it's all strings and you hold it in your hands, gosh, I can't remember now, it's terrible.
That's okay. Like
anyway, I remember her coming in all the time playing with that and mm-hmm. you know, and art. You know, I was so into art and telling stories and everything. And,
right.
yeah, I'm afraid sometimes they think that it's a waste, like the school board thinks it's a waste of money to teach art. And it's ridiculous. I mean,
it's horrible.
To me, that was the most important part of elementary school, you know, even middle school.
And it's, you know, it's a creative outlet. If children don't have a creative outlet, if anybody doesn't have a creative outlet, I don't know. It's a scary thing. They need that, you know. And there, a lot of times, it's very difficult to get them to do that at home because you know a lot of parents are working really hard and they don't have the time to sit there and do the stuff with their kids. And it's just easier to put them in front of a screen, you know. And but that's sad. I mean, those programs are so important. They're important for the child's development, you know, for cognitive reasons, for motor skills, like for everything. But the creativity, you can't get that anymore. For a child to realize their own creativity, and it's always going to be individual, and it's always going to be coming from a different place with each individual child. And it's so interesting, even if you ask them to draw a picture of one particular thing and you see the different perspectives of what every single child mm-hmm. has seen it as and is not only their capabilities but just their vision, you know, that really helps build their individuality, you know, as well as their creativity, obviously. So it's just so important.
My daughter's been a high school English teacher, and she teaches AP for the last 8 years. This year, she's going to teach fifth grade.
Oh, wow.
So that's going to be a big change.
That's a big step. You know, it's funny because Autumn's first grade teacher was a fifth grade teacher originally, and they put her into first grade for last year, just for Autumn's class. They actually moved her back to fifth grade this year. But, you know, even in talking to her about things, mm-hmm. she had forgotten that at first grade, they're still learning who they are. They're still, you know, becoming little people and even learning little skills like how to express themselves or talk to other people or play with other children or you know, what's right and what's wrong. Or like she had forgotten that, you know, because once they're fifth grade, obviously the development is so much beyond what a first grader is. So she had to really kind of overthink the way that she was expressing herself, the way she was talking to the kids, when the kids came to her with what normally probably would be deemed as silly little things. For these kids, those are giant stepping stones. You know, every step is a huge step for a child because every step they're learning something about themselves. They still, you know, are having a hard time tying their shoes or something.
That's
so,
you
know, they're really learning how to talk to each other and how to play together and how to express themselves. And, you know, I think it took her a while to kind of get back to the point where, oh, wow, you know, they're not fifth grade mentality. I've kind of got to, you know, roll myself back and try to really think like they are because they're basically just coming out of kindergarten. And,
yep.
and they're going to continue to learn every day. That's what I tell my daughter. Yep. I'm like, I told her, you know, even with our relationship, I said, here's the thing. I was never a mommy before you. So where you know that you're learning every single day and every step, I'm learning with you every day and every step.
Right.
You know, I'm learning how to be a mommy. So we're on this journey together. Because they're born into this world looking at you like you know everything. You know, like you're the mom, you know everything. And I'm like, you know, I might make mistakes sometimes. I'm always going to try to do what's best for you. That's my first priority. But we're learning both together as you know, as we go along. And I think that's important. I think a lot of, even with a lot of parents, I think they don't give themselves enough credit, or they feel like they're so tapped out of energy, or they're, you know, they're trying so hard, or their wheels are spinning and they're not really making any progress. But, you know, like even the fact when you said, you know, I'm a good mom, like those little things are so important to hear, because sometimes you just, you lose your way and you really just don't know. So it's always...
Oh, I could tell. You know, I could tell you're
really
a great
mom.
To hear that.
We do.
That's
we
a
have
no-brainer.
A lot of fun. We have a lot of fun no matter what we do. I have to say, it's an activity every day.
Last time we talked to, we also, I think I gave you 5 stars on Reflections, which was a great solo album. I really, really, really like that album as well. So you got two killer solo albums out there now.
Yay, good.
Yeah,
thank
you're doing pretty good there. Yeah, I love the stories. You know, we talked before about how you met Richie, which is so cool. You met him on a soccer field. And it was the radio station, right? We were playing, again, was it against Deep Purple that you were playing against?
That's right. Deep Purple was on tour, and they called up the radio station I was working for, and they asked if we wanted to do a charity match. And so the DJs came out to play and played against Richie's team, which was basically just stocked with ringers, like these really amazing European players, and and Richie, and I think maybe Roger, and the rest of the guys weren't playing, but Richie's an amazing soccer player, football player.
Is he really?
Oh, he's great. Yeah, he still plays.
Really?
He still plays once a week.
Oh, he plays once a week?
Yeah, and he's still he's running rings, and actually that's one of the things on tour that we have to, we always make sure that, you know, we have this long laundry list of things whenever somebody joins the band or the entourage or, you know, like the crew or whatever. And one of them is they must be, you know, bring your cleats or at least some sneakers because you're going to be playing soccer with us for sure.
Has he ever played with David Beckham?
No, he has not. We haven't met Beckham, no.
Yeah, I was just wondering.
No, that's true. But I know he's met a lot of the the older classic, amazing greats out there, Lothar Matthäus and Pele, like he, you know.
Pele, yeah.
We're going way back. He used to go see the Cosmos games, actually, when he was back years ago, many years ago.
Yeah, we had I grew up in the D.C. area in Baltimore.
Okay.
We had the Diplomats, I think, Washington Diplomats.
Oh, cool.
Our soccer team, yeah. And we have a soccer team down here in Tampa Bay, too. They're pretty good.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
we love it. I mean, it's so funny because, you know, even the people that he plays with now, when he tries to recruit people to come play soccer, he tells people, well, you know, if you're too good, you basically are not allowed to play. Like, if you're on crutches or in a wheelchair, you can play with us. But other than, he doesn't want the competition. He doesn't want the flying elbows that are going to hurt people, you know, because some people get so hell-bent on competition and, like, trying to kill people just to score a goal. So he's like, it's all about just getting out there, getting the exercise, having fun with it. You know, you get to see your social circle, and, you know, it's something different besides just going down to a bar and drinking. It's just nice to be able to get out there, play your game, you know, feel good about yourself, and get some exercise in.
Yeah, it's not easy either. My kids played soccer, and my son was a pretty good soccer goalie. He played in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember one time they said, okay, parents, you're going to play the kids. And, man, I was out of breath. it's a big
deal.
Hard,
right? I know. I love soccer.
Deal.
I mean, I played for many years, even before I met Richie. I was in for probably about 7 years or so. So all growing up, I played soccer on teams and tournaments and things. And ironically, when I was at the station, they wouldn't let me play because they said I was too young, so I wasn't allowed to play on the soccer field when Purple came to town.
You're kidding me. How old were you?
No, so I actually just stood on the side of the field and just cheered my team on. But I would have loved to have gotten out there, and I think they needed my help.
I would have killed them.
Totally, right? I know. Richie always says that I'm the secret weapon because nobody expects, you know, especially when you're playing overseas.
It.
Look, I'm 5'4". I'm a girl. I'm blonde. You know, they don't. But I have a really hard kick. Mm-hmm. So they don't realize that when, you know, when the ball comes to me, it's going to actually, I hate to say it, I'm not bragging about this. I actually feel really bad about it. But this guy who was one of the video production guys, last time when we were recording, we played a soccer game against him. He was in goal, and I kicked the ball so hard, and he had it trapped at such an awkward angle that I broke his finger.
Really?
So his finger bent all the way back to try to stop
the
ball that I kicked, and his finger was, and he's, you know, I felt awful about it, so now he calls me killer. He doesn't even call me Candy anymore, he just calls me killer. And he's Australian, so he's like, killer, you know? Exactly. But, yeah, he doesn't even refer to me as Candace anymore. He's just, my name is Killer. Yeah,
Killer Blackmore, I like that.
Killer Blackmore, I know.
Killer
which is
Blackmore.
Out there. And here I am saying, I'm putting out all these really peaceful, beautiful songs, and my
I know.
There's something really wrong with that.
They don't know the other side.
Right?
Killer
you
Blackmore.
You don't want to see the other side of that.
Exactly. Yeah, they should have let you play. That didn't make any sense at all because, you know, girls are great, great soccer players.
Right.
You know?
I know. I love it. I love it, too. We have so much fun when we get out there. But and it's funny, too, because when my son turned 5 years old, he looked at me and said, Mommy, this year, football and wrestling. And I was like, whoa, all right,
wrestling.
Kid. You know, that's what you want. Yeah, he's totally into it.
Really?
So,
his new
greatest, like, in, you know, the thing that he's discovered recently is Dwayne Johnson, because it, somehow it went from Maui and Moana, mm-hmm. and then we looked it up on YouTube, and he discovered that was The Rock. And which
right.
led him into WWE, and then it's a whole other world. But, yeah, so when I told Richie, I said, you know, Rory really wants to play football this year. And Richie's like, great. And I was like, wow, I'm glad you're supportive. That's fantastic. So I signed Rory up for football, and I went out and I got the little, you know, the little football, and I got him all the stuff he needed, the mouth guard and everything.
Cool.
And then Richie came to the field, and he's like, well, what the heck is this? And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, this isn't football. I'm like, no, this is football. And he was like, this is not what I thought it was going to be. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I thought you meant soccer. I'm like, if I meant soccer, I would have said soccer. Like, you've been living in this country since 74. You need to start speaking a little bit of American, right?
That's funny.
Not always English.
That's funny.
So I always say
you're not worried about him playing football then?
No, he plays flag football. He's
oh, flag football. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Which was perfect because he's the shortest kid on the team, but he's so strong, and it's like between 5 and 7 years old, and some of those 7-year-olds are giant 7-year-olds. And
that's true.
And, but Rory is so tough, and he doesn't back down. He's just like Daddy. He doesn't back down from anything. And he actually has Daddy's sense of humor, too, with practical jokes, which is very scary.
Really?
I had no idea that goes through your bloodstream. I had no idea. But it's frightening. But he gets in there, and, like, because he's the smallest one, you'll see him underneath this huddle of big, giant guys who are, like, trying to, like, all knock each other down, and Rory will duck underneath everybody, come out the other side with the flags.
Huh.
And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, he totally gets them every time. I don't know how he does it. Like,
position does he play?
I think they switch, and when it's so little, I think they just switch it up.
They
were like giving every kid a chance to try all the different positions at this point. So, but he loves it. He's the practical joker who will come up behind me while I'm cooking dinner, and he'll just like get a handful of ice from the freezer and
take
it up my back.
Yeah,
you know,
I used to do that. But the kids,
oh my God,
I used to do that all the
at
time.
The age of 5. This starts so early.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you got brilliant kids. I mean, look at their parents. Come on,
it's scary.
Their
parents are not. I'm a little worried that I'm not going to be able to keep up with whatever they come up with.
In the blood. Has Richie bought the kids a little strat yet? Or
no, not yet.
Little Marshall amp.
You know what? Rory has a drum kit. He bought him like a very simple kid drum kit. Because Rory is all about hitting things.
Yeah.
And Rory loves it. Richie actually brings him into the dungeon room downstairs, and we set
up music
on the sound system. He's got lights, like these lights that, you know, every time he hits one of the drums, like it changes
right.
like blue to red. So he's got he set him up on a little mini stage down there. And
oh, you're kidding me. That is so
cool.
He
loves it. It's his drum solo. He thinks it's the greatest thing.
Well, before you know it, he'll be in the band.
Right? I know. We'll be opening for them, I think.
Yeah, that's
my daughter and my son. Actually, it's really funny because my drummer now, the troubadour of Aberdeen, his name is Dave Keith. He's amazing. And he does this great drum solo. And in the middle of a drum solo, which my kids are like fixated on watching him when he does his drum solo. But while he's doing his incredible drum solo, he'll just like keep the bass drum going and he'll start drinking a beer as he's like doing his drum solo with one hand. Then he'll like do his feet and he's got two beers and he drinks both beer as you know, as he's doing the drum solo with his feet. And the other day, my kids were, you know, they have all these like boxes of instruments. So I overhear these conversations. My daughter goes, "Rory, do you want to form a band with me?" And Rory's like, "Yeah." And she goes,
"Oh,
okay,
no.
You want to play?"
Here we go.
She goes, "You want to play the drums?" He's like, "Yeah, I'll play the drums. That's awesome." She goes, "All right, but can you drink two beers at one time?" So that's the criteria now.
That's
for
awesome.
Drummers.
We
set the bar pretty high.
That's funny. Last time we talked, I was intrigued by Richie's ancestry and the Jamaica Inn story and all that. And, you know, and I just want to read you something real quick. I asked Ian Anderson about his, because, you know, nobody asked Ian Anderson anything about but music. We talked about the Bible. We talked a little bit about politics.
Oh,
we
wow.
talked about his heritage. Wouldn't you want to know Ian Anderson's heritage?
Totally.
You know, the way he presents himself on stage and everything. You know,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But he told me. I asked him about his family heritage and did you trace your heritage? He says there's probably some dreadful Danish Viking who landed on the east coast of Scotland and probably didn't even leave the sheep alone.
I love his interviews.
He's so funny. But the gist of it was, you know, it wasn't a very romantic or glamorous background he had. He said he might have had some Viking blood in him, but that was about it.
Okay.
He said we brought with us the customs, the language, and costume jewelry.
Interesting.
But I would have never thought, you know, I always thought Ian Anderson might have, you know, like there might have been a minstrel in the gallery or something.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you would have thought, right?
Yeah, that's from the medieval period or something, you know.
Wow.
He would have been one of you guys, you know,
right.
in that ancestry, you know. But
didn't happen.
But then Richie, yes. And Richie, you can see it just in his demeanor, especially in California Jam when he, you know, busted out the TV cameras, you know, that he does have, you know, the pirate in him, you know.
Oh, yes. Exactly. Yes, that's true. And he really doesn't bat. He's so principle-based, he doesn't
right.
back down from anything. Like, if he feels that he's right or that somebody else is being wronged
right.
in a situation, he is the first one to step up and get right in the face of whatever the problem is, which sometimes makes me very nervous. But he's definitely a tough one, for sure. And actually, it's funny because we started doing some stuff on Ancestry.com, and his dad was very big into making family trees. So we were just talking to his brother when we were over in England recently, and you know, trying to get more information on the family tree. But I love when we were entering the information. There's a woman who was in his ancestry. One of his ancestors, probably back to the 1800s, and her name was actually Cinderella.
You're kidding me.
Cinderella,
wow.
spelled with S, S-I-N-D-E-R-E-L-L-A. And her last name was Farmelo. Cinderella Farmelo. Sounds very English. But I just thought to have Cinderella in your family line, like that blows my mind a little bit. It's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. you went to visit the island. It was an island where, the pirates would come to this island with their gold or their treasures and things like that.
There's an inn. The Jamaica is the Smuggler's Inn, Jamaica.
The Smuggler's Inn, right,
they come in from, like, Penzance and the go across
right.
Bodmin Moor. And, yeah. And they still have that accent. I think I told you last time. They still have
Do
that
they really?
Accent where they talk like pirates. They're
yeah,
all like,
so cool.
oh, R. Like, they do the R thing a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
You thought that would just be in movies, but now there's a whole area of England where they actually talk like that.
My daughter got married last year. It was in St. Augustine, Florida, and that
oh,
was
nice.
Cool.
Yeah, I've seen, I had a friend of mine whose family lived there, and the pictures looked amazing.
It is cool. It's
very
got
historical.
Some history there. We went on the ghost tour and did all that stuff. It was,
oh,
it was
nice.
Really, really neat.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's so important to, like, pay attention to the history that's going on. You know, there's
oh,
stories around us all the time, and I mean, even where we live, there's an area, there's an old church around the corner, and they have headstones dating back to like the 1600s from old sailors and captains of ships from, you know, around Long Island, and it's pretty amazing the stuff that's just like right in front of you, like all the time, but we really don't pay attention.
See, I like cemeteries. I could walk around a cemetery and just, you know, look at all the tombstones and read them
yeah.
all, you know.
I mean,
I was watching an interview with you and Richie was saying he'd like to be a ghost.
He kind of is a ghost. He creeps up on us. I call him the Phantom because you never know when he's around. Like, he just sneaks up on you, you know, wearing all black. We're not allowed to have any lights in this house. Lights, even if I go out and try to get, like, light bulbs,
right?
The second I turn my back, he gets Sharpie markers and colors them in red.
You're kidding me. Really?
Where? I can't actually see anything in this house, and I feel like I'm in a cave. My kids
laugh.
They're like, Mommy, we live in a cave. I'm like, I know. I can't see anything.
My wife does that. She likes everything in the dark, you know,
really?
Like a dungeon, and I'm the opposite. I like light, you know, because it's positive. It's energy.
It's nice when, you know, especially like in things like the kitchen when I'm cooking or whatever, like I need to kind of see what I'm doing. And he gets very upset with me. He's like, there's no ambience in here. I'm like, but I'm cooking. Would you rather have ambience or salmonella poisoning right now? Like, you have to choose. Well, I need to know the chicken is done, you know.
I'm surprised you don't have torches.
Pink, I can't see.
I'm surprised you don't have torches, you know, up on the walls. You
know,
like
yeah, the beeswax medieval.
Yeah, yeah.
My house will burn down one day if we let it.
That's funny. And you know, one thing you need, too, you need a moat, right? You need a moat, and you need that drawbridge thing going on in the front of the house. You know?
That's true. And probably, like, a dragon under the stairway or something. Well, we definitely bring the ghosts with us wherever we go. So.
Yeah. Do you believe in ghosts?
Of course.
Yeah.
I do, yeah. As a matter of fact, my daughter's into ghost hunting now.
Oh, is she really?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh. Both my kids are just, they're very, very open-minded, and they just, they love it. They're intrigued and very interested. I love the fact that they're not scared, you know?
Exactly.
They're interested. They're asking questions.
Right.
They're intrigued by it. And I'll tell them certain people think, you know, this way or that way. Everybody's got, you know, you kind of basically have to follow your own heart and see what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it's your path that you're making in life. But, we've had so many experiences that we always say, just because you can't touch something doesn't mean it doesn't really exist. You can't touch love. You know it exists. You feel it. You know, you can't actually touch music, you know. But these are things that affect you deeply. You know, they bring you to different realms, different heights of emotion. So, you know, just because something isn't right in front of you at that particular moment when you summon it, when you call it right away, it doesn't mean that it's not there at all, right?
True. That is true.
I mean, we know Australia's there. We don't see it.
Yeah.
Unless you take a plane there. But no, I'm kidding with that. But you know, there's so many things that we know are around just by feel.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Now you guys have been to castles, right? And
no, many. As a matter of fact, we play castles. 12th
century
castles.
I mean, that's like the main areas where people have seen, you know, real ghosts, especially in England, I guess.
In England we play more historical opera houses. So, again, going back hundreds and hundreds of years, obviously there's so many castles in England, and we play a lot of castles throughout the Czech Republic and we've done them in Italy and Spain and obviously Germany every year. This year we're playing Luxembourg, a beautiful castle. We're actually Ian Anderson, last time we were there, Ian played the night before we were there, so he left us a big signed, you know, like a little message on a poster that was in our dressing room the next night when we got there. It was waiting for us. But it's a funny thing, you know. Whereas you would walk into a place, there could be a castle that's completely clear that has none of this stuff going on. That's just very peaceful and nothing. And then you might go to another place that's just been built, and it's, you know, it's more the grounds that might be, you know, have that energy or that activity. And the place might look brand new, but there might be something that was there prior to that, you know. And you know, in another realm, they wouldn't even see that. They would just know where they were going. And there's so many different ideas, too. They might go back to where they're comfortable to. They might just be energy forms that haven't even been born yet. Once you start thinking about stuff like that, your brain just starts
blows the mind,
right? But for me, it's always been like, my analogy has always been like, it's the difference between seeing just like a flat square in front of you, and then you start getting involved with stuff like this, and all of a sudden the square turns and it's a cube, and you start to see all these different dimensions and all these different possibilities and realms, and it just really, it's intriguing, and it opens your mind so much. And again, nobody knows, nobody can say, even if they've been ghost searching, I don't like to say ghost hunting, I'm not a big hunting fan, but if they say ghost searching, you know, for many, many years, even those people who have experienced things, nobody really knows why they come back to where they do, or if, you know, what the reasons are. You know, the experiences you had in those places, but we can't say for sure, oh, this is why ghosts appear. You know, there could be so many, you know, you just have to keep your mind open and just enjoy every experience. But that's the same thing in life as, I guess, as in other lives. You know, you have to, in this life too, you have to keep your mind open and enjoy every experience anyway. So it's almost like a life lesson.
But everyone's got to put their smartphones down first.
Because
we're getting to be, you know, like robotic. And
did you ever
like
see that picture of the zombie apocalypse? It's just like,
yes,
a group of teenagers like looking at their hands, pressing buttons. I'm like, wow.
That's right. Exactly. It's sad. It really is.
You know what? When we landed in England and we drove from London to mm-hmm. the hotel we were staying, which was right next to the O2 Arena, and we were exhausted, you know, we're on jet lag, we're stuck in traffic, it's taken us like 2 hours in a car, but it gives you a chance to look out the window and see, you know, observe things that are going around.
Right.
And if I tell you, on that drive, I'm not saying it happens all the time, even on that drive, but specifically when we landed and drove, whether it was that time of day or that particular road or whatever, if I tell you hardly anybody there was on a phone or a tablet or typing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I go to New York City, everybody's staring. You know, like
if
you go to certain places, or even in Germany, everybody's like staring at their hands and pressing buttons or talking on their phones or Bluetooth or whatever. But that one particular ride, I was like, oh my goodness, we've just found, like, look around. We were amazed that hardly anybody on that ride was doing it. They were riding bikes. They were talking to each other. We went over bridges. They were looking at the water. Like, I feel like we've gone back in time.
Enjoying life.
Amazing.
Real life. Yeah.
It was kind of like, you know, you learn from stuff like that. It's not 100% hopeless. There are people out there that are still kind of, you know, enjoying
I still have a flip phone. I refuse to buy a smartphone. I don't care. I'm on the computer so much because I'm also a writer, you know, and I've written a couple of books and, you know, I stay up late at nighttime. So
right. That's the most
all I need is my
time
computer.
Time.
I don't need to walk around with a computer in my hand too.
No,
it's
I don't blame you.
Too much.
I don't blame you. Richie has a flip phone, but he still doesn't know how to use it.
Yeah.
So, he says he has it in case of emergencies. I'm like, so in an emergency, what are you going to do? Throw it at somebody if you don't know how to use it? Like, there's no point in having it. So, but he's old school. He'd probably just rather, you know, send out the message on carrier pigeon or smoke signal at this point. And use a phone.
That's so funny. Blackmore's Night, I saw a couple of great Deep Purple songs that you guys do as well. Soldier of Fortune, Child in Time. You did a great version of Child in Time.
Oh, thank you.
You know, it's incredible. And then all of a sudden you're doing a slow version of Smoke on the Water, and then here comes Richie with the power chords, you know, coming in there just like the old days. It's so cool. It is so awesome.
Yeah.
It's such a good band.
You know why we love it too is because he with this song, these kinds of songs, he doesn't feel the pressure of that he has to do it.
Exactly.
He pulls it out when he wants to do it, which is so much more freeing for him.
He looks really happy. He looks like he really enjoys that band.
Yeah, he's in a good place. He really does have a really great time. Even when he was, you know, redoing some of the Rainbow shows, he's you know, which is fun. That's fun for him, but it's also a lot for him to try to remember from so many years ago.
It is.
There's so many great songs with that too. But then he's always like, you know, great going back to Blackmore's Night. You know, like he's that's where his heart is right now.
That's where his heart is. Yeah,
absolutely.
And he performed some dates with Rainbow mm-hmm. in Europe. I think it was in June, right? Where he did some dates. How did that go? Was he happy doing those shows?
Oh yes, great. It's great. I mean, he always feels like it's that nostalgia. You know, he's bringing the fans back to them. You know, being teenagers again and being able to play those songs and we've got a really good group of people in the band, and we have a good time. And unfortunately, actually, we had to cancel. Well, we didn't cancel. The venue canceled one of the shows, so because it was in the Manchester Arena, where
terrorist
bombing just happened, and they didn't. We were asking every day, "Is this? You know, it's horrible. Are you know, what are we doing? Are we playing there? Like, what do we do with that?" And the promoter didn't tell us until we actually were on a plane and on the other side, and that when we landed, we got the message that no, we're not going to do that show. So they took that show out, which was hard for everybody. But at the same time, it was great because you know, we Richie had put out Land of Hope and Glory, which is actually also not only put out as for a rainbow track, but he put it out for on the Blackmore's Night CD for the 20th anniversary, the double CD, which is called To the Moon and Back. So that's coming out later, probably I think next month. It's one of the tracks on there. So it was great for him to kind of put that out for people because he really wanted, you know, he's such an English guy at heart. You know, he lives in America, but he still has an English passport. He still hasn't gotten American citizenship. England is you know, it's his roots. It's where he comes from. His whole family is there. And, you know, it's his blood and his breath. And he's so nationalistic with England. And when something so horrible like that winds up happening, and obviously it's been a few times now in England, but it was important, I think, for him to kind of do that song to show his love for, you know, for his country and the pride of the country and to give it to the people as well. So, you know,
England really got hit hard, you know. It's like boom, 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 you know, and with all this, you know, terrorist stuff.
It's horrible. It's horrible what's going on now. And it's so scary. I mean, yeah. I don't know how to fix something like that. It's very, very frightening. You just have to you get out there and you do your music and hope that everybody's safe and everybody's okay and your children are okay and your fans are okay, your friends, your family. And
exactly. You know, I interviewed some people that, you know, we're talking about terrorists and things like that. I talked to Patilla Clark, and she talked about World War II in England. I talked to John Mayall about World War II in England and, you know, the bombings and they'd have to be in air raid shelters. And, I mean, you know, imagine that in England, you know, when you're getting bombed, you know.
Oh, my God, I know. Richie actually has a scar on his lip from falling on an air raid shelter.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that.
little known information about Richie Blackmore.
Is his mustache covering it up?
Yes, exactly. That's right, exactly.
I figured that.
But it's so funny because, you know, you see more, like, the more English people I see, like Phil Collins, I think, has that same exact scar. Like, what is it with the English in that area of your lip? I don't know, it's funny.
I think, what's his name, from Cheech and Chong, Cheech has if you look at his mustache, it's kind of not straight from the scar that he has there.
Oh, really?
It's kind of a crooked mustache, yeah. He's got a scar there. And my son's got a scar there, too. My dog, he was playing with my dog. We had a Sheltie, and they were playing, and he accidentally bit my son on the lip.
Oh, no.
So from that day, he still has a scar there.
Oh.
So it's pretty common.
Right, I guess so. Yeah, there you go.
You do a lot of charity work with animal welfare, right, you guys?
Yes.
But you and Richie both?
Yes.
What kind of things do you guys do, and what kind of animals, and where, and what locations, and things like that?
Oh, yeah, well, we try to switch it up with every location that we do. Like, in England, we were doing Save the Badgers, because apparently the badgers over there are endangered. So we were collecting on behalf of the actually the Badger Fund came, and they were collecting on behalf of them. When we were going to Germany, there was one year where we bonded together with the WWF, the World Wildlife Federation, and we did that for a few years. And that was brilliant because they worked it out, because they're such a giant, you know, foundation, they worked it out with the promoters, and they were able to secure €1 per ticket. So it wasn't, you know, like breaking the bank for people who came to buy tickets. And we always try to keep the ticket prices low anyway. It was just €1 per ticket. And with that, when we spoke to them, they said to us, where do you want the funds to be allocated? You know, go to our website and check out the different animals that need it. And I'm like, I'm not going to decide, you know, if just because, you know, this one is furrier and cuter than, you know, that tortoise. Like, so it deserves to live more? Like, I can't make that kind of decision. I said, you guys, you know, I want to save all of them, you know. So I said, you guys know where you need the funds. Where it can be used better, you know. So, we'll, you know, the funds will be transferred to you guys, and then you decide, you know, what to do with it and where. And it was perfect because what they wound up doing was, because of the funds that were donated through our concert, they were able to plant 6,000 fruit trees in Borneo, and mark off a restricted area, a habitat for the orangutans. mm-hmm. which are endangered. And the problem was the orangutans were being endangered because of poachers and because of deforestation,
right.
and their whole habitats of fruit and trees were being flattened because of development. So we were not only able to help with them having their own area that was protected, which was great for the animals, but also planting the fruit trees also helped with the oxygenation and giving back to the environment. And so it actually wound up being like this whole, you know, environmental project as well, not just the animals, which is amazing and good enough, but, you know, on another level, it helped the environment too. And then when we come, and we've done a couple of things like that with WWF and COO. L with the O, one of the O's is actually like an oxygen symbol. Wound up figuring out our carbon footprint, and we were able to plant trees in Panama that would like replenish the air with the
wonderful.
Carbon footprint of whatever we used for our touring.
Right.
So we've done stuff like that through the years. And when we come home, though, the dates that we do at home, we usually try to, instead of having like, you know, major foundations, because there's a lot of celebrities, you know, here that wind up helping with animals.
Right.
So we try to help the smaller charities and the smaller shelters that need the help, because a lot of the local charities and the local shelters really, really need it. They're hands-on. They're doing it 24/7. They're asking just for donations of, like, paper towels or, you know, like anything
sure.
they can do to keep
sure.
it going. And so whenever we get to certain towns, you know, we kind of look up what the local charities are that are doing amazing work and that really need the help and are, you know, so what we'll do is we ask them to come to the shows, and they're able to set up booths. They can raise awareness mm-hmm. of their foundation or their shelter. They hand out paperwork to people. People wind up getting involved as volunteers or donations for them specifically. And sometimes we even, like, auction things off on stage so we can raise you know, funds for the specific animal charities as well. So, but we change it up locally every night when we're on tour in America.
Good for you. Thank you for doing that. That's
yeah.
wonderful. I'm a huge animal lover, and anything, anytime you can save an animal or help an animal, you know.
Absolutely.
I donated my time with the Humane Society here locally.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
that's
and
great.
It was it was an eye-opening experience, you know, to
absolutely.
See everything that
I mean,
gets done.
Oh,
yeah.
And it's heartbreaking what you know, I can't even watch the commercials that they put on, you know, about it. Or, like,
I know,
the things
I know.
That flash up on a screen. I literally, I'll wake up with nightmares. So I have to try to, like, put it out of my head. Otherwise, I'd be consumed by it every day. But these people who are actually in these shelters are doing it every day. They see the most
yeah.
horrific things, the abuse
yeah.
and the, you know, the abandonment. And they
terrible,
fix it,
isn't it?
Or it's incredible. They are true angels here on Earth to
mm-hmm.
be able to do this kind of stuff every day. Whereas, like, even seeing one animal to me would—I get goosebumps when I talk about it. It would just break my heart. They're like doing amazing work and constantly and tirelessly, and it's hard. It's hard on their hearts and on their spirits, and they do it for the greater cause and of these animals, their well-beings, and it's just incredible. So. You know, even to just, like, be able to bring awareness so other people help as well. Like, I remember
right.
there was this place
right.
down the road from us, and I saw that they needed some stuff. I looked them up on the website, and they were like, we need, and they had a whole list of things. And I just went to the dollar store and loaded up the whole back of
yep.
my truck with everything that they needed.
Yeah.
And I pulled up to their you know, the area. And I was like, I have some donations. And they're like, oh, let me help you bring it in. I'm like, no, I think you're going to need, like, a wheelbarrow or something. Like, do you have something bigger? So I just emptied everything out. And those they were so touched. And those are the same people we invited to come to the Patchogue show here last year. And they were like, we remember when you brought all that stuff, and thank you so much. And they came here, and they set up a booth. And they've been talking about that moment, like, ever since then. And, you know, it's just you wish you could do it for every one of them and all the time, you know. So.
I know.
Yeah,
you know, it's heartbreaking is the stupid poachers. They're still around. They're still killing elephants and things like that for their, you know, for their tusks. And
yeah.
on Facebook, every once in a while, they'll post a picture that, oh, my God, it, like somebody killing a giraffe for sport, you know, things like that. It just, you know, my blood just boils. I said, why? Why are you killing a giraffe, you know?
Right, and how? What is so wrong in your brain that you're proud of that moment?
They're proud of it, and it's usually like a young kid, and then their father taught them, you know,
right.
that kind of thing.
Right,
it
exactly.
Just,
that's, I never, you know, I mean, in every single step of that, to me, is so wrong. Like, to buy the gun to go out there specifically to kill something.
Right, right.
Like, before you even get out there and actually commit the act, knowing what you're doing, that you're going to go out there and get blood on your hands and destroy a life. Like, you're okay with that? Like, really? Like, I feel like I'm almost not even talking to a human being when I... Actually, it's funny because I always tell Richie, I'm like, you know, we talk about oxymorons. I'm like, mankind to me is an oxymoron. Like, you can't like think that that's okay to go out there and then to hide in the bushes or to wear the camouflage or to spray yourself with. Do you ever read some of the stuff that people do? They spray themselves with urine spray. Like, I'm just like, really, like to make them their, and you know, and they're out there in the freezing cold, and then they see something, and they absolutely just destroy its life, and they're okay with that. That's frightening to me. That's evil and on Earth, like right there. I will never.
Yeah, I interviewed Ted Nugent. I couldn't even bring up animals with him.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way. I would get in such a, you know,
I can't.
An argument with him. I didn't even want to go there.
No. I'm glad you didn't ask Ian about it. Does Ian Anderson do that? I don't know if he does, and I thought.
Well, Ian loves cats. He's a big animal lover, too.
Oh, good.
I know that.
Okay.
I don't think he kills anything. I haven't heard
good.
It.
No, yeah, I hope. Yeah, because he's into the, there's a specific type of cat. What is it? Not Burmese. Is it Burmese?
Could be Burmese, yeah.
There was a whole thing
right.
he was doing with all of these cats where he was saving cats. Yeah, that's right.
Because I asked him, I said, do you have any wild cats? He said, oh, no, I'd never, you know, put a wild cat in a cage or anything like that. So
right,
he was
good.
Really,
oh, that's good. Good, I'm glad. I probably have it totally wrong then.
Didn't you tell me once you guys played Epcot in Disney World
a long time ago? We've been there. We haven't played there, but they actually in Paris at Disney World over in Paris every year they play at Christmas time they play Winter Carols. You know, for all the people, they have it on their big sound system over there, so it does get played.
Are you guys going to be playing any more dates in the U.S. pretty soon or coming up?
Right now we're actually looking at fall. Now we're looking
in the fall. That's a good
time.
Yeah, that'd be a great time.
So hopefully that'll all work out. That would be great.
Awesome. Anything else you want to add?
No, that was a really good conversation. We talked.
I think we covered everything.
I know. I feel like I've given you stories of my kids and my family. I keep forgetting we're recording this, or like other people are listening.
That's right. And not only that, it'll be on YouTube, iTunes, 5 other music publications. I do a good job promoting each artist.
That's awesome. And of course, we'll put everything up on our social media and our .com sites and Twitter and
appreciate
Instagram.
That.
So we'll fill in any gaps. That's great. Yeah, the
awesome,
only other thing
awesome.
Was just that, you know, the 20-year anniversary of Blackmore's Night and that we've got the double CD coming out.
20 years. I can't believe it.
Tell me about it. Look, when the 5-year-old little kids come to me, you know, in the beginning of the project and then now they're 25 years old, I'm like, how did that happen?
Jeez.
It's amazing. It's crazy. But, so we've got basically, you know, what we did to choose these tracks is I pulled the fans on Facebook sites and I asked them what their favorite tracks were over the years and if there was anything they thought that, you know, should be redone. And so many of them said, no, don't change anything, don't touch anything, but these are our favorites. So we chose a lot of the fan favorites and made that disc one, you know, like Ghost of a Rose, of course, always winds up coming up, or Fires at Midnight or Good Lantern, stuff like that. And so we kept it true to form, you know, remastered and put that out there. And then disc number 2 is a bunch of new songs. So we also did, you were talking about the Rainbow thing, Richie and I covered I Surrender from Rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
He's got
awesome.
Land of Hope and Glory on there.
Yep.
There's we redid some of the other songs, like Somewhere Over the Sea. We added some new parts and made it into a different kind of production, so we changed that. We put Moonlight Shadow on there, made it very acoustic and very intimate, which is very different than the original, you know, when we put that out on the other CD.
Right.
And actually, there's another song that my daughter brought home from singing class, which was called Ghost of John.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very... we never heard the song before. She brought it home around Halloween time.
Right.
And she was singing it, and it sounded like almost like a Gregorian kind of chant, and it was amazing. And Richie immediately fell in love with it, so we had her sing it about 1,000 times. He's like, sing it again. And he picked it up on guitar, and so we re-recorded that and added some more lyrics to make, you know, more and more verses. And she actually is singing at the very end of it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's
so you'll
incredible.
Hear her. Which is very funny because when we asked her to sing on it, she first came down there and she belted it out like Annie on Broadway, like she was singing the part. And I'm like, oh, that was amazing. I'm like, but let's just make it a little bit quieter and a little bit more innocent. And because she was like ready to just tackle this song. She was so excited. And then she started doing like these vocal exercise scales where she's like, have you seen the... And I'm like, no, don't do the mm. Like, just keep it true to the note, you know. So finally, like, the fifth take or something where she's just singing, have you seen the ghost of John? Like that. I'm like, that's perfect. She's wow. like, but that's the most boring way I sang it. I'm like, it doesn't matter. Perfect. She
well,
wanted to keep adding her own little flair to it. So, but that's cool. So we've got, you know, there's a bunch of new stuff as well as, you know, the
Incredible.
Old classics.
Well, you guys are wonderful. You know, I love you both. You know, keep up the great work. You got an incredible band there. You do all great things, positive things, and you've given the world a great CD here for children and adults as well with Starlight Star Bright. We really, really appreciate that. So, Candace, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really, really appreciate it. My best to Richie.
Okay, definitely. And I hope the CD will calm the twins for you guys when they come. Congratulations on that.
I think it will. We're excited. two twin, identical twin girls. Can you believe that? We're going to have a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you, Candace.
Double the love, though. Double the trouble, double the love, right?
And there you go. You got it.
Have a great time with them. Enjoy them.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye, Ray.
Bye-bye now. You can purchase the latest CD from Candace Knight entitled Starlight, Star Bright at Amazon.com. For more information and concert dates, visit www.candace-knight.com and www.blackmoresknight.com. Visit their Facebook sites at www.facebook.com/CandaceKnightOfficial and www.facebook.com/BlackmoresKnight. Official. They're also on Twitter, www.twitter.com/ TRU Candace Knight. Very special thanks to Carol Kay of KO's Productions for arranging this interview with Candace Knight. Also, Doug and Don Newsom with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Join me biweekly Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions, or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com. And
thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio, Station 1.